Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is June 24th, 1999, and in the Fireside Room tonight, a forum is being held, and the title of that is Homosexuality, What Do We Tell the Children? So now let's go join the Fireside Room for the forum. And this is 99-5.
So tape minister, you can start the tape. My name is Dan Spencer. I'm one of the summer teaching staff coordinators here at Holden this year, and I'm delighted to welcome you all to this week's forum. Just a word about forums at Holden, then I'll talk a little bit about the topic for tonight. Forums are a long-standing tradition at Holden. If you've been coming to Holden for many years, you're probably familiar with the wide array of different topics that we've had. Forums are meant to be a chance for folks in the village to gather together and engage with each other around issues of importance to the church, to society, to our families, to our lives together. The aim of the forum is not to try and reach any agreement necessarily or consensus, but rather to engage in respectful listening and dialogue about issues that are important to us. And so we will go with that tonight. In a moment, I'll introduce, I asked four people who would help us maybe get the conversation rolling here, and I'll introduce them in just a moment. But tonight's topic is called Homosexuality, What Do We Tell the Children? And part of what prompted it is that this weekend will be the 30th anniversary of what's known as the Stonewall Rebellion. Stonewall Rebellion was an incident that happened 30 years ago in Greenwich Village in New York. And it was a time when there was a police raid on a gay bar, a gay tavern called the Stonewall Inn. It's only this time the patrons of the bar fought back, and it created, it's sometimes seen as sort of the birth of the modern gay and lesbian rights movement or the freedom movement. Since that time, one of the things that Stonewall did, and the birth of that movement, was it really broke a long-standing silence around the issue of homosexuality in society and also in the church. And since that time, there's been an increasing amount of discussion, dialogue, debate about these issues, so much that it's become very influential in the political realm as well. Now, this issue has long been a source of topic of discussion here at Holden Village. And in fact, at least since 1983, Holden has welcomed openly lesbian and gay members in its community here. At the same time, the issue of homosexuality and Christian faith is one on which there's no consensus within the broader Christian community. There's still quite a bit of debate and difference of opinion about the issue and about the place of gay and lesbian people in society and in the Christian church. I think one of the most difficult and sensitive areas has been the whole area around children, both the topic of children and homosexuality, but also how to or whether to discuss the issue of homosexuality, gay and lesbian people with children. At the same time, I think children today are deluged with information and misinformation about homosexuality and about who lesbian, gay, and bisexual persons are. So I think it's no longer a question of if children learn about homosexuality, but how, when, from whom, where. One little incident of this, I come from Des Moines, Iowa. A study there 2 years ago said that on an average day in the Des Moines public schools, a child hears 25 anti-gay remarks. Simply on an average day, you imagine that's 125 each week, that's 600 a month, you start adding 500 a month, you start adding up. So whether or not we're explicitly talking to children about gay and lesbian issues, they're picking things up. And the question then becomes, how do we as people of faith want to broach that issue? So I asked four folks here to help us start the conversation just by talking a little bit about their own experience as a pastor, as a family member, as a gay person, as a parent, to help us get the conversation rolling here. So my left here is Chris Hughes, who I met 15 years ago in community here at Holden. And then Dave Greenland, who pastors a Lutheran church in Hill City, South Dakota, who I've only known for a year, but delighted to know him. Karen Carlson, who is doing a variety of different things. Spiritual direction, has been studying in seminary as a social worker, also from Hill City. And Mary Lowe, who's working on her doctoral degree at Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, also a longstanding member of the Holden community. So I asked Karen if you'd get us started here, and we'll hear a little bit from our panelists, and then we just want to open it up for whatever our own questions, concerns, and comments are.
Yeah. I think about, I was on staff here almost 10 years ago, and I think I was on a panel at that point, too, about homosexuality, because my brother is gay, and we come from a family, a pastor's family, of five kids, and my brother, John is the second, and I'm the fourth. And John came out to me when I was a junior in high school. And the night that he told me, I remember it real distinctly. We were sitting in his living room in his apartment, and he'd hidden all his magazines and hidden everything that he had that had anything to do with gay or lesbian issues. Sat me down on the couch and said, I want to tell you something because I love you, and I want you to know who I am. And he told me, and it felt like my whole world shifted. I didn't know what that would mean and what it would, how it would impact me or anything. I had a lot of questions. And from that point on, it really changed how I understand who we are as people of God and who all of us is. And I remember my mother at that time, we didn't talk about sexuality in our household. It was a Lutheran household, so that was something that other people talked about. So we didn't really have a lot of discussion at home, but I remember my mother was very distinct in her behavior, and she just took my sister and I to a candlelight vigil one night that was being held at a local college, and she said, we're going to go here because it's about supporting gay and lesbian people, and John is now one of them, and we love him. And so there wasn't any question, it was just, this is how it's going to be. So we didn't really talk about it either. But I remember one of the things that John said to me and to my younger sister, who was also in high school at the time, he said, what I want you to know is that the world is full of possibility for who you can become and who you are and who I am. And I want to give you permission to also let yourself explore what might be happening for you in terms of sexuality. At that point, I thought, oh no, what does he know that I don't know? But I've really appreciated that since then, and I think that's one of the most profound things that I've taken from this journey with him, and it's been a continual dialogue over the years, not an instant, I mean, I think at the core there was an instant acceptance of John, and yet there's always been a lot of asking questions back and forth, and how is this really true for you, and I don't understand why you became this way and I didn't, and on and on, the questions have gone. But I think at the beginning when he opened the door for my sister and I, it sort of said to me, the door needs to be open for any of us. And I think that was a real liberating thing once I got through the fear of sort of getting to know myself. So it's really been a powerful thing to sort of look at the world with John in my eyes and look at how he's been treated and experienced life. And it's really added a richness to my life.
Well, I'll go next. I'm representing parents' perspective, and I have two children. Abby's 13 and Claire is 8. And when Dan asked my wife if I would do this, I think is how it played out. he asked one of us to do it, and it ended up being me. I started reflecting on my own experiences, or when I bumped up against homosexuality, and if I go way back to my own childhood, and I'm 40 years old now, I know that I was one of these typical young guys that did the classic gay bashing kinds of things, and there were some guys in my high school that came out right after high school, and I could look at each one of those and I could rationalize why they were gay, because their father spent the last 15 years in a VA hospital, and you know, they had these other weird things going on, so of course this is their way of coping with the world, that kind of thing. And then I went to college and had this great friend whose name was, I'll just call him Tim. And we were two peas in a pod. And after about our sophomore year, somewhere in our sophomore year, we were taking a walk, and we both had girlfriends, and he was this star swimmer on the team, and we were both in choir and did all this great stuff. And we went on this walk late one evening, and he said, you know, Chris, I think I love you. And I'm paraphrasing a long conversation. I said, well, I said, I love you too. And he said, no, I think I'm in love with you. And I said, I don't feel the same way. And at that point, my world shifted, but what I did with my shift was I put in a wall. I denied that experience for a long time. I treated the next day like every other day that we've had together over the last, 2 years, and basically denied that experience happened, and we slowly drifted apart. And now I'll leapfrog over to Holden. I was at Holden 15 years ago. And with the community that was there and the growth that I'd done in the interim period, I'd gotten to a point where there were people in the community that were openly gay and lesbian, and I was able to understand that there wasn't this psychosocial thing going on. There wasn't this other, it was who they were. It was who they were always. And it was a blessing to me to live with them in community and to collaborate with them. So there's kind of my background in my own migration. How I approach my kids today, and they do get it in all shapes and forms. It's in the sitcoms now, the playground stuff is still going on. There's more, we go to a Reconciled in Christ church right now, and so they hear it from the pulpit occasionally. And when it does come up, I think our response kind of has been is, well, so what? Their natural inclination was to be uncomfortable with the subject matter. I think that's the innuendo that's built into most of those playground type things that they hear. And our reaction has been, no, God says to love someone as you're loved, and that's your response. And if two men or two women love each other, how could you say no to the kind of love that your mother and I have? How could, however they perceive that, hopefully that's a good thing. But how could you deny two other people that are feeling those same things, how could you deny them what we have in that relationship that we have? So that's maybe as much as in-depth as we've done. They've asked us if we know gay and lesbian people, and we've said yes. And they've also, usually they don't ask who, but on the couple occasions they have asked, well, who are they? Are there some at our church? And we said, sure. And at this point, and I don't know if this is good or bad, but we've chosen not to identify those people to them at this age. We've just kind of want them to treat everybody equally and not look at them differently and treat them as we do, which is hopefully the same. So that's kind of my speech.
I suppose I could go. I'm a Lutheran pastor in South Dakota, in Hill City. And where do you begin? Where do you begin? I grew up as an artist and still am. And as a result, in the art community, I think you're with, whether it's stereotype or not, you're with, immersed within the community of gay and lesbian people all the time, whether it's theater or painting or ceramics or music or whatever it is. It's never been, I cannot remember thinking that there was any difference. It was just another way of being in the world. I realize now, being in South Dakota, that is an exception to the rule, especially when you become a Lutheran pastor and start preaching. In light of that, that's myself. That's where I'm positioned. Coming into the parish in Hill City, I took over this church that a wonderful pastor had been pastoring there. This woman, she'd been outed, and she was trying to file mobility papers to go to another synod, and our bishop chose to oust her from the church as a result of that being outed. A painful process for the pastor, no doubt, and painful process for the church, no doubt. A lot of people left for a variety of reasons before I was there. They left because the bishop should not have done that. They left because the bishop should have done it quicker. They left because of all kinds of a host of reasons. And I came on the scene a little bit over a year later, and knowing that that was a hot item in that church, but and I don't feel like I'm foolish, am I? I don't feel like I'm foolish, but I didn't really feel like it was going to do me any good nor them any good to just skate around the issue, which was it could have been an option. Just let it go. And I don't think that that was an option I could afford, because it was there and it was baking. You could feel it in the walls of the place. So I felt it was necessary as a pastor to come out, in a sense, let them know who I was and what side of the fence I was going to fall on, with the sincere belief that as their pastor, I think they should know where I'm standing and where I'm going to place myself, at the risk of having some people leave. I'm not so sure that the church is here necessarily to keep the doors nailed shut from the inside. I've got a wonderful friend who says, he's a pastor, best quote in the world. He says, after 30 years of ministry, the best thing that you can remember, Dave, is fresh air comes into the church no matter which way the door swings. Wonderful quote. But so I preached my position, and not a political position. I felt a real faith position, in favor of being open. Now there's some tricky things that get involved here as a pastor. I think you have to locate yourself as a pastor in this issue. I believe you do, for the sake of the people in the congregation. But where do you begin? You could begin from the position where I was, to say that there is no difference. It just happens to be sexuality plays itself out in a different way for some people, and the different people might be myself, actually. Or it might be lesbian or gay people. Or you could begin from the position and say that that's normal. Or you could begin from the position number two, that it is a sin. Yet we're all in sin. We all can't get out of sin. So let's just be open to those people that are sinning, which is you and me and everybody else that spit on the sidewalk. So homosexuality being a sin, but you're going to be open. That's another position. Or you could just say it's a sin, and that's it. I'm on the other side of the fence, and I don't know if somebody else could spell out some other positions. But that's where I fell, was to be open. And as it relates to kids, I just have one story, and then I'm going to shut up. I was supposed to form this forum for these high school kids. I've got 30 high school kids at the church that are very active, and they come as much as we can offer things to them. And I was supposed to prepare the material for the night, and I didn't get to it because I was doing so many other things. And there was one videotape left on the shelf that they hadn't seen from the year before, and I really should have just, I'm glad I did it now in retrospect, I should have reviewed what it was. So there I ran over. And, an hour before, so I could check out the videotape, see what the format was going to be, and maybe gain some just kind of starter questions for these kids. And it happened to be on sexuality. That's it, just sexuality. It never touched homosexuality, none of that. Had no other ways of being in the world, just heterosexual sexuality. And the tape was done, and we started to do some of just the regular questions, and it wasn't too long into it when the question came out. Somebody in the back said, well, what about gays and lesbians? And then it really went off, and it was off to a flying start. And to my surprise, as we talked in this circle of 30 high school kids, it was a wonderful surprise. Some of the leader kids, the jock kids, the strong kids, were the ones that led the discussion and in talking about homosexuality. And one in particular, we'll name the kid, well, let's name him Bob, because he's the captain of the football team in the whole nine yards. No offense, Bobs. But there's Bob, And he says, to the question of homosexuality, he says, well, I've got a friend at school that I eat lunch with that everybody picks on him all the time. They pick on him because they think he's gay, you know, and he does all the stereotypical gay things, and he even carries a handbag. And he says, well, you know, his life would be better if he didn't do some of those things, but I think that's who he is. And his friends said, so do you think he's gay, Bob? And Bob says, well, you know, I'm not sure if he is. In fact, I'm not sure if I am. And that was moving for me. And so that was Bob. Now, Bob says, well, I've had a girlfriend since I was 2 years old, and I really like girls an awful lot. He says, but honestly, he says, I'm not sure. I've got feelings for boys, too. And then one by one around the room, they went and they said, well, I can see that. You know, I can see that. And then they talked about a continuum of being heterosexual or homosexual. And where are we on the continuum? Are we all on one end or the other? Are we in some places here or there? So that was my experience with the kids. And that didn't take too long in a town of 650 to get out. It's been pretty wonderful.
Yeah. Well, when Dan asked me to talk tonight, I was pleased to do that. We've had recently in my family my nephews who I'm very close to, and their father is my brother, and they are 13 and a half, and I've been informed several times will be 12. There's a birthday on the way soon, and they live in LA, and then my partner Jane and I live in Oakland, and we see them quite a bit, and have taken them to Alaska for 2 weeks, and we go down for weekends, and they just came and saw us. And I think since we figured out once that since the younger boy was three, I think 2.5 or 3, there's only been, I think, 2 visits I took, very short 3-day visits, when Jane hasn't been there. So in a way, it's been so natural for the boys that Jane and Mary come to visit that it kind of just never came up. You know, I mean, it was just kind of like, here's Jane and Mary, and oh, all right, we're going with Jane and Mary, and let's go. And the four of us just have the best time. And baseball games, pizza, Star Wars movies, you name it. And so it was about a year ago, I talked to my older brother, and his older boy started junior high and was on the baseball team. And I was getting very concerned about the lack of information that they were getting from their parents. Because not being a parent myself, but hearing a lot of things from my mom, know that if you hear from your parents, even if you think they don't know nothing, when you get a little older, you think, wow, mom was really right about that, you know, and it's so important. So I started officially nagging my brother about having the talk with Ben, and you'll never meet him, so I can say Ben, because we're out now, so, about, you know, Aunt Mary and Aunt Jane. And, you know, and I kind of talked to my brother about it and said, okay, yeah, we'll do that. Now, what would you like me to say? So, wow, that was not what I expected him to ask. He was going to have a lot of work. I would just be the nagger and he would be the talker. And, you know, I guess, then this is a year and a half ago now, so it is a little hard to flesh out from memory, but one of the things that I know I said was just to talk about how, it was kind of what Chris was saying, that the love that my brother Tim has for his wife Tricia is what Jane and I have, and that it just came as one of God's wonderful surprises and wonderful gifts. And also that I think the other thing I wanted him to tell Ben was that it was okay to have a lot of questions about it, and it was okay to have questions now and then maybe have more questions in 6 months, but that it was a safe topic, that we weren't just going to have this talk once and then it was over. And so, of course, my brother didn't have the talk. So that kind of was more months went by. And then the boys were coming up for Memorial Day. So the official nagging began on the 1st of February. And he was kind of like, well, did you talk yet? And I recalled one time watching that movie that the kids like, I don't even remember the name, Ace something, the pet detective with Jim Carrey. Ace Ventura, thanks. And there's a scene in there, because I watched it with my nephews, where at the very end you find out that, how does it go, that the woman, the person they think is a woman is really a man, and Ace Ventura kisses her. And one of the scenes that made the boys laugh the hardest in the whole movie was after he realizes he's kissed a man, he spends 5 minutes in the shower covering himself with like iodine and Bactine. And the boys thought that was hysterical. And I was ready to throw up. So that was, you know, they weren't quite ready then. They were pretty, I thought they were a little on the young side, but for the talk. But, I mean, that image has haunted me of watching that movie with the boys. So my brother called one night, and he said, well, we had the talk. And the boys are real close, so I'm sure Ben told Andy everything 5 minutes later. There's no question about that. I said, well, how did it go? And he said, well, you know, we just said, well, you know, you're going to go up and see Mary and Jane, and, you know, we just wanted to tell you that, you know, Mary and... I don't know exactly what he said. He was a little slim on details, but I just let that go. And I don't know if he said the word lesbian, or if he said heterosexual, or if he said partners, or... I didn't really ask details, and I said, well, how did it go? And he said, well, Ben said, oh, I've known that for a long time. But he said, I didn't ask because I didn't think it was polite. And I would say, and I don't know if Jane would agree with me, I think she would, but I come from a family that's very, very healthy sexually, and we talk about, you know, there's some jokes, and Mom had the talk with us in fifth grade and stuff, so it wasn't quite, I think, I would say it was different than what you described, you know. So, and then the next question my nephew asked was, does Grandma know? And I don't know why that was important, but it was. And it was enough for him to ask, and the answer was yes, you know, that Grandma knew. And that was really it. And the boys came to see us, and, you know, there was no questions, there was nothing different about it, but I felt different. You know, because there were no, where's that magazine? There was no straightening out of the house, so to speak. And so that was really important. And I think that just two more things I'd like to say is, one is that it was a little bit awkward because it was so natural. I mean, they, like I said, the boys had always seen us together. You know, so it was kind of like, it wasn't a big deal, but yet it was so important for me that they get information not just from the locker room, because both the boys do a lot of sports, you know. And the second thing, I think that's really important, that just, I'll say it because it hasn't come up, that I think is so important to talk about with kids, and I guess Karen did bring it up, is that depending upon how you interpret the statistics, whether 5% of people are gay or 10% of people are gay, if you bring that up as a safe topic for your kids, think of what that means if your kid is gay. Mm-hmm. Think of what that means for them, that all of a sudden, the possibilities for them to be normal, healthy people in loving relationships and honest relationships with their families are expanded to, you know, you're okay. Even if you think your kid's not gay, even if you don't know a person who's gay, or you think you don't know a person who's gay, to have that talk says to them, if this is what you choose for your life or what you find yourself to be, it's safe in this house.
So. Let's open it up for the conversation.
Dan, yeah. I think for our family, it's been really important to have gay and lesbian friends that are out so that our sons, I mean, we live in a small town in Iowa where sports abound, and the homophobic remarks on playgrounds are very common, but to be able to say to Joel, if I hear him with his friends, now wait a minute, think of your friend X. How would you feel about that person hearing what you're talking about? And it's made a big difference in our lives to have gay and lesbian friends that are important to our boys and to us. And, you know, I think that's, when I was growing up, I didn't have that. And it's a lot harder to make fun of people if you're friends with them. So.
I think when I was growing up, what you said about that not being a polite question to ask. My family had several gay friends, and two who had been dating for quite some time, but I would have given anything to have them tell me that, or to hear that from my parents that was cool, or I never heard anything negative, but I never heard anything positive either, and so those culture filled in the negatives pretty well. I don't know, I think I was looking around like crazy for anybody who might be like me. And there were people I knew, but I didn't know it.
You know, you mentioned that you wanted to puke during that movie when they were making fun of the gay people. I kind of want to question the same sort of attitude about, I forget who the comedian is, Eddie Murphy, that did The Nutty Professor. And he did that whole movie about how it's funny to be fat. And, you know, people thought that was just the funniest thing. And I kind of think that, well, I don't think it's okay to make fun of anybody. You know, so the locker room jokes about gay people are, I think, just as bad as locker room jokes about fat people. I think we need to be understanding of everybody.
One of the harder issues for me to figure out, and I don't know if other people have come around this, is just to figure out what are age-appropriate ways to, if you're going to talk about it, how do you talk about it with a 4-year-old, an 8-year-old, a 15-year-old? And that was one of the hardest things for me when I was coming out as a gay man, because I have several nieces and nephews and godchildren who are really important to me. And part of my fear was that I would lose contact with children, because a lot of our society equates homosexuality with pedophilia, and so to acknowledge oneself as gay or lesbian is to put oneself as, is to be perceived by many people to be threatening to children. But it also, I didn't want to do something inadvertent that was going to be harmful to the kids who were really important to me. I didn't want to say something that would be upsetting to them or frightening to them or confusing to them. And actually, some of those, with my nieces and nephews, it's been, it's really taught me how to have to really listen carefully so that I'm not projecting my own fears and my own concerns. Mary, when you were talking about having the talk, with every single child who's been important in my life, particularly my nieces and nephews, I have spent a lot of time and energy thinking about when the time was going to come for the talk. And as a result, I think I sometimes really misread what their issues were, what their concerns were. I'll tell one story because it's emerged as a really fun one in our family. My oldest nephew, who's now 15, but at that time was 7, we had two conversations. We were driving along one day, and just out of the blue, he said, Uncle Dan, what's gay? And I said, well, Matthew, gay is when two men love each other or two women love each other the way your mom and dad love each other, not the way people here are saying. And that was fine for him. Mm-hmm. But about 6 months later, he and I were driving along, and he said, Uncle Dan, do you have a girlfriend? I said, no, I have a lot of friends, but I don't have one girlfriend. Are you going to get a girlfriend? Well, I don't really think so. I've got a lot of good friends. Well, do you want a girlfriend? I'm pretty happy with what I have. Are you going to get married? And finally, I said, Matthew, I thought, okay, it's time for the talk. You know, I laid on the line, and I can sort of feel my heart start to race. I thought, here's the future of my relationship with my nephew now is on the line. And I said, Matthew, does it bother you that I don't have a girlfriend? And he said to me, looking very seriously with his brow furrowed, he said, well, I'm just really afraid you're going to get a girlfriend and get married, and then you won't have all this time to spend with me. It was a really good lesson for me about, he was coming from a very different place, but the thing he had picked up was that his aunts and uncles who were married and had kids of their own didn't have the time to spend with him that his single aunts and uncles did. And so he was watching several of his aunts and uncles getting married. That was changing their relationship, and so he was really upset about this, but for very different reasons than I thought. And so it's been interesting, and I've had to learn that time and again to really set aside my own fears and concerns and really try and understand where my nieces and nephews or friends are coming from. Mm-hmm. So hand back to you.
I have a question. All of my children, all 4 of them, are grown. And when they were school age, this was not an issue. So I need some education. What is it that's going around the schools that is negative toward homosexuality? And what is the level of understanding of these children? Do they know specifically what's involved, or the hearing stories and myths educate me.
How about some who are parents now?
I've got another question kind of going along with that. I've seen that a lot of, and you touched on it, about how homosexuality and pedophilia and they're all kind of lumped together as a single deviant behavior. And I was wondering if there's some information that you can give to that, why that's all clumped together as one.
I can start off with that. I know Marcia has got some studies that she's examined too in terms of her children's issues. Statistically, it seems that when we talk about pedophilia in terms of an adult having sexual relationships or sexual abuse with a child, there is no more prevalence of homosexual pedophilia than there is heterosexual pedophilia. In fact, it seems primarily socially to be heterosexual males and female children is the dominant form. But it doesn't mean that there isn't also some homosexual pedophilia, usually involving males with female children, but not, or male children, but not always. But I think social scientists see those as two very different categories. Mm-hmm. Sexual orientation is what each person has in terms of who you're drawn to primarily emotionally, sexually, erotically, towards intimacy. And that's usually either predominantly towards someone of the opposite sex or someone of the same sex, although there are bisexual persons who have ability to be drawn intimately to both sexes. But social scientists, my understanding, really see those as very separate categories, although they're oftentimes lumped together. One of the things I think sometimes, at least I've seen it in studies of news reporting, is that oftentimes when it happens that it's homosexual pedophilia, it's named that way. And we'll talk about a homosexual Boy Scout master or homosexual this or that. And when it's heterosexual, it's not. And so it's not reinforced in people's minds that this is a heterosexual phenomenon. Rather, they see it as child abuse. But when it happens with homosexual pedophilia, and usually those two are linked. And I think they quickly get linked in people's minds. Mm-hmm. But Marcia, you or Mary, do you want to?
You know, go ahead, Marcia. The studies, I'm kind of interested always in, you know, we're talking about how you tell but the effect on children in homosexual partnerships or heterosexual partnerships, because there's been so many studies recently on just how important it is for children to be, you know, in a two-parent family, how important that is. And there's just so many interesting studies by this Popino and Gina Elstein and Barbara Whitehead who've talked about the effects of divorce. Now we have a kind of a longer period now. We can look at the effects of divorce and see that it is difficult for children. And certainly there are some marriages, it's better that it's over and it's better for the children. It was a very high conflict or abusive situation. It's much better for the children. But a lot of the marriages, you know, even though they're not necessarily happy for the parents, the children thrive in emotionally, intellectually. But it's interesting when you start looking at the studies about homosexual couples who have children, because there's such a big debate about that too, and that would take us into another, you know, discussion. But and I've had some students do papers on this. They find that, you know, again, it seems to be if you have a stable couple, then the children thrive, and there's not a higher percentage of those children becoming, you know, homosexual. They are thriving. It seems to be the couple relationship and the mutual love in that relationship that seems to be important. But maybe other people who want to go in that direction, you know, have some more information about those studies, because I found those very interesting, because, you know, it seems to be then you just need, and it kind of makes sense, two people helping out with the child or children to help them thrive. And if that relationship is strong, those children will thrive in all kinds of ways. So that's been a very interesting study. I think it's hard for us to talk with children about homosexuality because it's hard to talk about heterosexuality. It's hard to talk about sexuality. And I'd like to hear stories from people who've had good conversations with their children about that issue, because that's, you know, the talk is hard in sort of any way. And like you were saying, it's not even, boy, it wasn't a discussion at home, and it has to be a discussion now. We have to discuss this with our children, and I'd like to hear ways people have done that where they felt it's been very good situation.
I just want to make sure we don't forget the question.
Yeah,
right. And if I could just say two quick things. I think one thing you asked about, you know, what's going on in the schools.
and I don't know, actually, I'm still in school. You can do this a long time. But when I, you know, see my nephews and when I, you know, just seeing popular culture, and I'm talking to, you know, some of my gay male friends, and, you know, other people can speak to this too, but what is one of the worst things you can say to a young boy is that he's a fag. That's like the absolute worst thing. And because it says that you're not a man and you're effeminate and you're worth nothing. When I was growing up, we spent hours playing Smear the Queer. Yeah. You know, that was the game. What are we going to do? I know, let's play Smear the Queer when there's nothing else to do, you know? And I think the frequency of name calling maybe in some ways is less with girls, because in some ways it's more acceptable for girls to wear pants than it is for boys to wear a dress. I mean, that's a gross oversimplification, but I think in some ways it's easier for some women and girls to look straight than it is for some gay men. And then in response to what Marcia said about how you, if you want to do it without having the big talk, I think one of the best things to do is to say the word. Say, oh, you know, Bob at work, you know, he and his partner just bought a really cool car. Or to say the word gay, to say the word lesbian, to say the word homosexual. Because kids hear everything. You know, they don't miss a trick.
Well, this is an insurance. I don't know what period your kids are going through school, Lou, but I grew up in the 60s and for grade school, and I heard the terms homo, queer, fag, dyke, long before I knew what they were. I just knew they were really bad.
Right.
And then what is their perception of that?
Well, and this was the thing. That's why it was particularly terrifying when I began to sort of go through puberty and experience these feelings myself, because I didn't know what a homosexual was, except it was something really bad. And so was a queer, and so was a fag, and so was a dyke. All these terms that we had been hearing. And so by the time, I mean, I learned about these things long before I had any awareness about sexuality. But I just knew that these were really bad things, and therefore when I began to identify my own sexuality in those directions, it was absolutely terrifying, because as I think Jake said as well, I had no public role models, I had no visible role models, let alone any that were positive anyway. There were some negative ones there. I think what's different now is that both there's much, much more prevalence of anti-gay language, but there's also more prevalence of just talking about it. There are actually public role models now. You can look at Ellen DeGeneres. There are different ways that, so children, I think, are just being exposed much, much more than we were, but a real mix.
I think still, though, at the elementary school level, there's still this, I don't think things have changed all that much,
yeah,
unless there's a specific situation, and I think it would vary from family to family on how you've talked to your nieces or nephews or brothers or whoever it is. But I think that, surprisingly, still at the elementary school level, you're still in the same kind of period. I think by the time you get to sort of sixth grade, middle school, things change significantly. But I think that up till fifth, I still think that there's still that same sort of maybe 60s carryover, unfortunately.
I think a lot of it comes from parents. I mean, I think there's more and more, it's talked about, I think, that a lot of parents are frightened to death that their kids are going to be gay, so they're getting a lot of that language at home. I mean, in Decorah, we had parents keeping their kids home from school the day that a part of the AIDS quilt was at the high school. You know, it's unbelievable. But there's that kind of fear in families still in this day and age, and so sure, the kids pick up on that. Why don't we have to go to school today?
Are you saying that the children who hear these terms and know that they're bad, do they know what is involved in the whole badness?
No. I think there's a range on that, but I think a lot don't. Rob, do you want to?
Yeah, I work in schools too, and the thing is, you know, with elementary kids, an example is similar to that. And I think we tread so lightly on the whole topic, we just don't know what to do with it in elementary school, and so we do avoid it. And I think in many communities, we absolutely have to avoid it, because, you know, that everyone would be at our doorstep or on the phone the next day. But an example is I had a second grader who was down to the office because he was touching another boy's privates. Okay, so they're down to the office and we talk about why that's inappropriate. And he comes back, I wanted him to talk to his parents, comes back the next day, and I said, no, what did you learn? Did you talk about that? And he said, yeah, my dad said that's gay. So I'm thinking, oh, great, I should have never sent you to your parents, you know. Let's have a talk. But we rely on the parents because we feel that we have to at that age. And then, you know, we kind of wait and see what happens. But I think I also would mention the signs of hope, even in, you know, pardon it, if you're from Anoka, I teach up in that area, but the high school, all the high school staff, the ones who are willing to have a rainbow on their name tag, you know, recognizing for all the students that they're open and supportive of any student who wants to talk to them about any of these issues. So that's really a huge step, I thought, that they just kind of subtly all started wearing rainbow stickers on their name tags at the high school. And say, yeah, they're, you know, in Anoka, they're moving forward with this.
Someone was mentioning how it's difficult to talk about sexuality generally with the children. And I know it's something I never got discussed in my home. Mm-hmm. But if you tie in what was said over here about a gay child hearing the, you know, bit discussed in a matter-of-fact way amongst with his parents or her parents, and then later coming to terms with the fact that they're gay, think how much easier that is. And that, I think, makes it so much more critical if you have that about homosexuality than about heterosexuality. Because the first thing that they hear about the issue comes from the parents, and if that's from a loving and accepting standpoint, it's going to make their entire life a whole lot easier than if they hear something else. And one of the other things that they might hear might be something that I came across in a Lutheran church bulletin, saying that if you're feeling confused, with God's help, you can make the right choice, and you can choose not to sin. You know if you should come to this session. Maybe you know of other people who you should bring to this session. Basically saying, let's come to church and cure yourself, or bring your friends who might be gay along and get them cured. And that's in a Lutheran church bulletin. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't help but think how a 15-year-old or 16-year-old person is coming to terms with the fact that they're gay would feel if they saw that in their church bulletin and had never really had any kind of discussion, any meaningful discussion with anyone else important in the world. That's their first exposure to the issue from a voice of authority, how damaging that it would be and how difficult that would be to get over. It took years to get over something like that, I think. So I think it's more important to talk about this than just to talk about the birds and the bees, because there are a lot of gay people. You never know whether your child might be one of them or whether your child might be able to help somebody who's going through that by being their best friend and by being someone who doesn't judge.
Thank you. I've got a child that's getting to the age where it's concerning about sexuality and things like that. And taking into consideration somebody who had not been talked about it, bringing them up in a Christian environment, and is there anything scripturally we can do to help if something, if my child does turn out to be gay or not, is there something that I can look up and we can both go over and say, hey, you know what, this is something that we can get through. Something supportive, something.
I'll offer my read on that one, and I'm no biblical scholar by any stretch of the imagination, but love your neighbor as yourself. It's the golden rule. And people will throw, and this is the little bit that I do know, but Paul in some of his letters has written some pretty defaming type words about being gay and how terrible that is in God's eyes to act that way. And my answer to people who are aware of that is there's not a single word in the Gospels that says anything against being gay or having any kind of sexual orientation whatsoever. And if you want to go on a step further, who did Jesus serve in the Bible? In the Gospels, and he served the underprivileged and the oppressed and those that were looked down upon in society. And if you look around in the 90s today and who's getting bashed, they're one of the communities that comes to mind. And that's just my layperson's understanding of, and that has come up with my oldest one once. She either listened in church for one of the few times she listened, or figured it out, and I said, Abby, just go to the Gospel, and there's not a single word in the Gospel that says anything about sexual gender, and Jesus loves everybody. End of story. So that's the one I hung my hat on when that kind of came up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd echo that as well. South Dakota, you get that question a lot, you know, and you'll get people that, you know, throw Bible verses at you like they're tomatoes. And they'll bring out everything. And, you know, I stand with some of the feminist scholars that say, you know, some of the Bible stuff just is not defendable anymore. And I have to walk away from some of it. And it just in the sense that it was a cultural product. And maybe it was painful and hurtful, just as much as it was in the Hebrew scriptures to sell women for 20 shekels or whatever it was. Some of that stuff was all culturally mandated too. And just like Paul saying, wear, you know, a head cover on your head in church and never open your mouth. Where we draw the line? So it gets pretty slippery, and I guess I kind of refuse to kind of crack open my Bible and find literally, in my mind, I do believe it's true, the very few verses that I could combat them with, because that would be just a few tomatoes back to their uncountable tomatoes thrown my way. So I am not going to get into that fight. I believe the gospel is for all, and for those who are the oppressed and the hurting.
I think also, just talking, like, I grew up in an Irish Catholic family of 14, and my parents and my siblings even still, my parents probably have come even a little further than some of my siblings in their acknowledgement or their experience of homosexuality. And so for me, a lot of it has been even just talking to my siblings about it. I mean, we were down visiting my parents this spring, and we were watching some Law and Order or something on TV, and one of the lawyer's moms came in and wanted him to marry them or something like that, or get involved in clearing up some estate so she could marry her partner. And when he found out the partner was a woman, you know, he went through this whole turmoil. But my sister said, I can't believe they show this stuff on TV. And I just looked at her and I'm like, wow, like, you know. And I said, you know, you live a really pretty sheltered life. And she said, you're right, I do live a sheltered life. But I think part of it for us too in raising our son is that, I mean, I've had some questions about some of my nephews along the way, and they're married now, you know, and I don't know if we'll ever know if they're gay or not. And I feel bad for them in that in my family it would not be a very easy thing at all to be a gay person. And so for me, a lot of it is just talking with my parents when the situations come up, and I have some born again Christians in my family, I got that works, you know. So I think that's important too, in especially when you're raising kids in a community, and so allowing the conversation to flow among your friend or your family or whatever. I just think that's an important part.
And by curious margin over here.
I was just thinking of simple things that I've come across, and books. There are some good books out there. I'm always looking for ways to not have the big talk because it just seems too big. And that often leads into good questions from children, stimulates their minds, and they, you know, the words are on the page. And the other thing is, you know, when children are playing with dolls or Barbies or Kens and the girls are kissing, I find opportunities to just talk about different kinds of relationships, and that, you know, when people love each other, and, you know, so children are acting those things out all the time, and so I'm often slipping things in that are simple and easy and not the big talk.
Well, touching on something that you said about the television, watching in the Law and Order episode, I think that part of the problem is also that, for example, when Ellen did the coming out episode, there was a warning label. When Ellen would kiss another woman on television, there was a warning label. There's no warning label when heterosexual people kiss, and I'd like one. To be honest, and I don't, you know, and I think that's also, you know, I didn't say that just to be funny. I think that, no pun intended, but I think that I think that part of the problem is culturally, it's not just parents, it's culturally. What kind of message are we sending that, you know, we have to put warning labels on these things, that these things are, that certain things are inappropriate for children when it comes to sexuality, and certain other things may not necessarily be. I'm not saying that, you know, we should let our, you know, three-year-olds watch, you know, R-rated movies. I'm not encouraging that by any stretch. But, you know, when you're thinking about regular television, why, I think that part of the problem is that, you know, what we're sending culturally, a message that this is something that's a problem, or that this is a hot topic, or that this is something that's weird or different or deviant. I mean, we're still sending that message. I'm still getting that message. I'm 25. I should not be getting that message. I should be more comfortable with who I am and with what I'm about, and I'm just not. And I think that some of it is because, I mean, my parents were fine, but it's just these little subtle things that you get from television, these subtle things that you get. And kids pick up on that. Kids pick up on that there's a warning label. I worked at summer camp for 7 years with kids, and I had, you know, 5, 10-year-olds asking why there was a warning label on that Ellen TV show. And I did not know what to answer that. How do we deal with that? How do we talk about that? How do we talk about that amongst ourselves as adults, what we're doing with programming television, with books, with magazines, with movies, with those sorts of things? I think we need to talk about the media as well.
I think part of that warning label is also that the TV tries to exploit that to bring a lot of attention to it so that they get more viewers. I don't know that.
Well, there is that.
I don't know how much of it is culturally bad for the kids to watch, because, you know, there's a lot of stuff on there, and it has nothing to do with two females kissing that I wouldn't let my child watch. But I think that they like to draw a lot of attention to, like you said, hot topics that they want people to watch their show instead of the one on NBC or ABC.
Well, then the publicity is going to put the churches at war.
Right.
Because the fundamentalist religious right, all that whole side is just pushing so hard. The direction opposite of what we're discussing here tonight. And I have a brother that's hooked up on that side, and so it tears families apart. And he has his books, and all the people who have been, was cured, you know, and all that. And it's just very divisive. But it's important that we stand up for what we believe, and love and support of everyone, which, and there's no real answer to it, I guess, in terms of, but it is, it's other parts of the church that are really pushing the hardest the other direction. It's not so much the low-class, unchurched neighborhood. There's where some of those jokes and things are happening around the school there, but the real problem, I think, is churches against churches, in a sense.
Hey, go ahead, and then Pete can kind of get in over here.
This is just too good. I've got a lot of right wing, really, really right wing, born again Christian aunts in my family that literally came to my ordination. One of them came to pray that I wouldn't go through with it, so that I would actually become a Christian and not a Lutheran.
I'm dead serious. She's my favorite aunt. I just love her to pieces, but that's her position. And she's got all the books, and she homosexuality is a thing of Satan. And just kind of a fun little coup that I've had. She really, in a sense, fell in love with the organist at my church on the ordination Sundays, one of the fabulous organists in Chicago. And his partner George sang in the choir next to him, right there. And they are as out and open as can be. And I don't know if she's blind or what, but she calls him regularly for the last number of years. She writes him letters. She tells me how sweet and wonderful he is, and just what a shame it is your church is dying in Chicago. What's going to happen for David and George?
And I don't know if she's made the connection yet. But I think there are ways like that. It might have been the first person that she's ever openly been around and has actually gotten into her heart. But the left and the right and the middle and the up and the down, they do come together in human situations. If we could just have more human situations together. But what a battleground. I did get ordained and she's really pissed.
I mean, he's got to hit it, but I think that's also your response to your question about the Bible. That's one thing I'm always so impressed with over and over with Jesus. Whenever people approached him with abstract issues, can you heal on the Sabbath? Can you do all these things? He always brought it back to real human beings and humanized them. I think that's, if anything's ever going to change in this issue, it's with real human beings and real human contact. And that repeats you.
Yeah, well, so along that line, I think that, and I brought this up before when Jake and Catherine had their talk, there's no more issue to me that points out this tendency of people to take a very small point in the Bible or scripture and make it a huge issue and miss the whole big picture and the big point of the Bible, which is, and what Jesus was about, which was about love. And so they take these little tiny parts and just miss the whole picture. I think this is just a prime example of that. And I don't know where that, how they miss all that. And I guess that's the hardest thing for me to understand is where this came from, this fear and hatred, really. From something that really to me is very clear on the side of love of people. I don't know if people can address where the basis for all this hatred came from, but maybe it's just the general tendency to speak of people.
Sometimes I think you have to point out to people that the Bible wasn't written in American English and that it was 2,000 years ago in a different historical sense.
If I can just jump in. Oh.
Yeah, go ahead and then we'll go to Jacob.
Okay, and actually, Marcia is much more qualified to answer this question than I am, but as Lutherans, for those Lutherans in the room, we have in our tradition what Luther called the canon, which is within the canon, which is exactly what Chris is talking about before, and I don't know your name, but you were talking about the same thing, which is, what is it? Do we worry about the details? Do we, you know, obey all the Levitical laws? No. What is the heart of it? Is Jesus' compassionate love for all people, irregardless. And that was a pivotal part in Luther's theology. So for Lutherans to take that and to say, yeah, these verses, you know, they really were set in a very specific time and context, and what we really need to do is focus on what we see in the lives of Jesus, the life of Jesus. That's a very strong part of our tradition that we can really reclaim confidently. So I don't know if you could say any more about that, but that was my two cents on it.
Jake, and then over
here. Well, I wanted to try something out on the parents in the crowd. This is something I've been thinking about, which is that the issues around the exploitation of sexual minorities in the society aren't primarily about sexuality. So even if it's hard to talk about sexuality with your kids, that doesn't mean it should be necessarily hard to talk about gays and lesbians. Because if anything, you can talk about justice issues. Like, you know, there's an article in the paper like, wow, that doesn't seem fair that this person got fired from their job just because of somebody they loved. I mean, I think sometimes we get caught in thinking about the kind of the discrimination that gay and lesbians face and mixing that up with the sexuality that people you want that to be your whole life. Most people think I think about sex like all the time. And so I think maybe by not even talking about sexuality in terms of gays and lesbians, just as people who are getting a bad rap in our society, maybe that's a way of just of kind of leveling that entirely. Would that work with kids, or would they be like, yeah, but what do they do in bed?
No. And I'll offer this.
13.
Most kids, what they know about what goes on in bed or not, I mean, I'll go 12 and before, just using my own kids, they don't get that at all. They just, what is pointed out, what's different to them is that it's not a man and a woman. It's two men or two women. Mm-hmm. And the whole promiscuity thing, which you're alluding to, at least that's not in my kids' frame of reference, the things that we've experienced over the years. So, but maybe others have
different experiences. I think what you're saying is very good, though.
Yeah.
I think that is an excellent avenue. In our family, whenever anything like that came up, we were just very strong about, giving what we thought were the right answers, so they would be loving and accepting of all people. And as they went on to college and so forth, and I don't think it happened so much in high school that they discovered, there weren't so many kids out in high school, but in college there were. Mm-hmm. And our kids in college, many friends, it didn't matter, you know, and they were great. And I think that's kind of the way we did handle it. Mm-hmm. All the sexuality issues we dealt with pretty early. We were on a farm, so, I really think your comment is pretty well.
We're nearing the end of our time, but I know there are a few folks who haven't had a chance to speak who got their hands up, so let's get some comments.
I think one of the really big important things, just in people in general, is to learn and to teach our children to accept. It doesn't matter whether they're gay, whether they're lesbian, whether their religious preferences, what their ethnic background, anything. Learn to accept people and love people no matter what. I mean, that's just people that love each other, and to accept everyone. And it's been really, I have children, and to raise my children this way, sometimes it's difficult when you hear them come home and they have anti-gay remarks. And it's like, well, you know, I haven't raised my kids this way. And I think a big thing is having the personal contact. My son is 12, almost 13. He came home with a bunch of his friends and they were saying, you know, things about fags and gays and whatever. Well, he didn't have any personal contact with anyone. He really didn't know anyone. So some friends of mine, they had offered to give us their iguana that they couldn't keep anymore. Their little girl was afraid of it. So I took Adam with me. I said, we're going to go pick up the iguana. So he goes over with me, and it's a nice couple, and two women and their children. It's a nice family atmosphere. We go in, we get the iguana, we visit a while, we leave. And I said, what did you think about these people? They're really nice, you know, nice people. I said, well, I just, did you pick up on or realize that they were lesbian? He's like, no, they're just normal people. Duh, now that's, there it is, they're normal people. And I think it gave them a very different perspective. And I haven't heard a lot of the negative remarks that I had heard in the past. But that's just the realization that, wow, they're normal. They're just like anybody else. So it really helps them to have personal contact.
You're in a hand here, did you?
Oh, I just had a comment. I think that about talking about justice is a very helpful thing. And I think too often these kinds of conversations take place in settings like this, which is important, but not in congregations. Mm-hmm. And I think that would be very valuable. We have an adult ed committee in our church that, I wish I could take credit for the idea, but it was theirs. They did a very wise thing a couple of years ago. They invited, through an organization in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, two gay young women and one gay young man who came and talked with whoever wanted to attend in a setting like this. And they didn't talk about gayness and lesbianism so much as they talked about justice issues. Mm-hmm. And it was very helpful for the people who attended. We started out by saying that we are not here to seek agreement on anything. We're here to meet as human beings and talk about this issue.
One of the real ironies along that, I think that's such an important place to start, but I get imported into a lot of church settings to be able to talk, and that's fine. But almost without fail, afterwards, I hear from gay and lesbian people in those churches who say, boy, I just hope we get to the point someday when I can talk in my own church.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a commentary on our churches that, and these are loving congregations, and they see themselves as loving, and I think they generally are. But almost without fail, the people who are gay or lesbian in them don't feel safe or free to talk, and so they import gays and lesbians from outside to come and raise these issues, and that's a good starting point. But we should be able to get to a place where we're able to talk like this in our congregations as well. This is here and here too.
Yeah, I just want to echo what you said. My children are much younger. My oldest is 4. But I can already tell that whenever we start to lecture him, he shuts us out. You know, he doesn't really listen. And from what all of you have said at the beginning, that your world shifted when you were, you know, just hit like a rock, by a rock, because you knew that person, you loved that person. I think, I hope for my child that, you know, something like that will happen to him or to my children. Because that, I think that's an experience that really changes you when you experience something like that.
Yeah, one more here, and then I think we're going to have to stop this part of the conversation, Mary.
I think it's important that we share our own stories. I serve as a pastor in Oregon, and we are starting the conversation of becoming a reconciled Christ congregation. And we started first with the executive committee, which is the pastors and the president and the vice president. And then to decide where to go, then we took it to the council. And even there was a kind of a fear, even within the council, to have this discussion. And while we had the discussion, we started it out, and there was a woman in the council who said, I have to tell you that my son is gay. And it was an amazing experience to have her, in a sense, come out as a parent, as a leader of the congregation. And we found out later that several phone calls were made to her that evening after the council meeting, thanking her for telling them her own story. It was a very powerful experience, and hopefully, because that's what happened in the council, we can begin to have that within the congregation. But she had never shared her story, and she had been a member of that church for 20 plus years.
This is a point we can close on. Forums are meant to start conversations, not to end them, so I hope the conversations will go on. But an important reminder about that, Mary, is that one of the things that's different about discrimination against gay and lesbian people is it's often more hidden. It's different than racial discrimination or sexual discrimination, where you can identify pretty easily when there are racial minorities, when it's male and female, but we oftentimes don't identify who are gay and lesbian, and therefore it can go unacknowledged, but it doesn't mean it's not happening. It doesn't mean that our children aren't picking up messages about it, and so we need to be able to sort of keep that in mind and think, they're learning something, whether or not we're part of that conversation, so what role do we want to be in that conversation? But, yeah.
I really firmly believe that God wants us to love everyone equally as ourselves. I believe that he sent Jesus as an example to show that we should love each other with brotherly love, with, again, the love that we should have for ourselves. But I've got a question. You know, when God created the perfect mate for Adam, he made a woman.
Yay for archetypes.
And yeah, the Bible wasn't written in American English, but I think they would know whether God created a man and a woman.
Can I respond?
And that's fine. All I'm just aware of is the time, because I want to make sure we close this up. But we can, if people want to continue conversing afterwards, are welcome to do so, and we'll talk further about this. We try and hold it to an hour. We're a little over that now. But no, your point is certainly worth one bringing up. But I'm going to call an official end of the evening here. Those who want to continue to talk, feel free to do so. Thank you very much for coming out tonight.